Hello, I'm James Sandy, and this is the New Curiosities Box, a soothing seasonal balm of arts and culture from Birmingham and beyond. In this show, we continue our series on the creative wonders of Digbeth's Grand Union by way of an exciting new project mixing craft beer, opera, and witchcraft. We consider the age of musical protest and culture clash through a touring production of new play Rebel Music, and we take a snapshot of mental health and well-being through Bedlam Festival 2019 as it enters its fourth year. If you have a project or an idea you'd like to feature in a future show, or you just want to check out our archive, you can go to www.switchradio.co.uk/James Sandy. We start with an intriguing collision of opera, science, brewing, and mythology. I caught up with collaborators Daniel and Ollie from Dig Brew and Infinite Opera to talk about their fresh take on brewing up down-to-earth performances in unexpected spaces.
So I'm here with Ollie of the Dig Brew Company.
Dig Brew, yes.
Dig Brew Company. Mm. And I'm here with Daniel, who's the artistic director of Infinite Opera.
Yes.
I'm reading his t-shirt as we introduce folks there. Co-artistic director.
Co-artistic. Ah. Yeah, let's not forget about Roxanne. She's the librettist of the Opera and Secrets, all the shows. I just write the music.
I think he's been very very humble there. But let's start by talking about Dig Brew. And let's talk about, I guess its name gives away where it is, here in Digbeth. But let's talk about what it is, because it's quite creative space, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's a brewery in Digbeth, which is what the name will give you. And I suppose its most unique or most prominent feature is that the brewery space also has a drinking space and an eating space, and it's a very large kind of warehouse, all in all, that we try as often as we can to put to as many creative uses as possible. The kind of the best example being when we work with Infinite Opera, we have beer operas in the space. Yeah, so we make a large range of beers in Digbeth on our kind of, it looks big to the layman, but actually very small brewery, and then we serve them 10 feet away in our bar.
And was that a childhood ambition to own a brewery?
Not in the direct sense, but maybe looking back, we can start to see some some roots.
Seeds were there.
Yes, yeah. It started at art school, actually, like I went to. Studied fine art, and within the school, the way it worked is that everyone had a studio space, which was essentially a corner of a room. And in the second year, or the summer between the first and second year, I built a bar that my studio space became for my fellow colleagues and students. Because it was in central London, so we couldn't afford to go drinking locally. And because we were the art students, we were too cool to go to the student union bar. So we had to create our own space, marginalised ourselves.
Familiar story, that one.
But then we started to do some brewing alongside it. The objective then was to just literally to get the cheapest possible beer for ourselves. But then that kind of that's what sparked the kind of the love of it, really, and it spiraled on from there, sort of 80 years, I think, now ago it was. A very long time ago. But yeah, that kind of community aspect to it as well is an incredibly important part of it for me.
And Daniel, let's talk about Infinite Opera. So let's explain to people what that is, first of all, because obviously it's opera, but it's in a slightly different approach, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, it's quite related to what Ollie was explaining about the kind of the craft opera scene before. So in fact, we're kind of right now thinking about creating, well, it was created because we created this kind of operas ourselves, but kind of naming this kind of a genre of opera that we do. We're thinking something about craft opera, related also to the collaboration we've been doing. So what we try to do is operas that are a whole show, but they're smaller in scale, and we just present them in a different environment than the big opera houses, 2,000, 3,000 people sitting there, and then a massive orchestra, a huge stage. That can be a bit scary sometimes, especially for a first-time opera experience. So we want to keep the quality of those operas, and we don't renegade of the tradition. So we just want to follow it and just embrace it, but just present it in a different environment. Our orchestra is smaller, still really exciting music going. Also, the stage is smaller in scale, but it's presented in a different environment. The brewery was the perfect space. So we bring opera down to earth a bit more, and we just present it in a way that is a bit more friendly for people. I mean, a big opera house experience is great. It's like kind of aesthetical, kind of personal experience that is incredible. But in that environment, you're kind of by yourself enjoying. Whereas in the brewery, for example, you can just talk to the people next to you, eat a slice of pizza, drink a bit of beer, and you have like kind of a show just happening there in front of you, like kind of a, maybe 5 meters from you. You can almost touch them.
There's something clever, I think, about bringing kind of opposites potentially together. You know, so that kind of opposites attract idea. And what I mean by that is brewing and drinking beer aren't always associated with an operatic experience, you know, which is perhaps, I guess in some ways, quite a formal experience, you know, quite a big event. So, but that's kind of the point, isn't it? I think you're both trying to break down some things, make things a bit more accessible to people.
Definitely. And I think when we talk about the relationship between the two kind of activities, or the two kind of enterprises, Infinite Opera and Digbrew, we, or at least I always kind of start to focus my thoughts more on craft beer, or like a small brewery like mine's relationship to a much larger kind of beer industry, and then similarly with you. And it's a kind of like, there is no, we're not trying to like reinvent the wheel with it, but it's a space that we've managed to like carve out within that, and it's a little like kind of enclave to the side that we want to kind of invite people across into. And we kind of do that with beer, you're doing that with opera, and it's a strange Venn diagram to draw, but we found that like actually there is quite a large sort of crossover, or at least the way in which we tell our kind of like story is like what it is that we do and why we do it. They're the kind of the same kind of story structure, if you like, and it makes a lot of sense to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's worked, so we've kind of stuck to it.
There's something about experience as well, isn't there? So craft beer is very much about experience and the experiential aspect of it, isn't it? You know, the kind of the history and the process and the characters behind it. And in some ways, an opera's a bit like that, isn't it?
You know,
there's a kind of, I can see that sort of synergy. So how did it come about? How did you say, yeah, let's do an opera in, you know, behind the stalls and the taps? How did that come about?
Well, what if that happened in this same space that we are here right now?
Okay,
well,
right.
More or less, I'm just giving it a bit of just magic to the story. No, actually, Infinite Opera was in our artistic residence here at the Grand Union. And we kind of were interested on the topic of beer and witchcraft, and we were discussing that with Kim McAllis, who works here. So I think it's program director, she was here.
Mm-hmm.
And she was our supervisor of the residency. And our main contact, and she just told us, well, you should go to Digbrew and just talk to Oli. He will be like interested in all of this. And I just popped in one day into the tap room, and I said, we should do an opera about beer. He said, yeah, let's talk about it. And then Kim had his contact, because Digbrew at that moment, and I think they still do, like kind of provide beer for the events here in Grand Union. And we just started just talking about all of this around September, kind of last year or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nearly a year ago. We calculated that.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Now, you've touched on two very big German and Italian things, beer and pizza. Okay, not exclusively, but Germany has a heritage in brewing, let's say.
Yes.
Now, a lot of opera, from my very rudimentary knowledge of opera, is in German or Italian, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So how do people... I guess one of the things I've always struggled with opera is trying to understand it, because, you know, it sounds wonderful. But the language, the physical language of it, you know, I don't speak Italian or German. So how has that sort of social aspect of food, if you like, helped explore some of those difficulties.
Well, we tried to make it easier for everybody, so that's why we decided just to write this opera with beer in Middle English, which nobody understands already. So then
okay, fair enough. Yeah.
We just embraced the topic, stereotype. But part of this joke, which actually stressed in Middle English, so it's a great libretto by Roxanne. We provide a massive surtitle screen, so people can follow what's going on. And then we also have a little handout with a bit of the story. And also the first idea was, and we did it like that, it was present the opera in an episodic manner, like if it was a Netflix style show. So our operas were around 30 minutes long, so it was in a way in which can be digested easily, because it's not a 2-hour show that you need just a really big focus for a long time. 30 minutes is something that happens quickly, especially if you have a beer in the middle. So it's if you have a scene, 15, 20 minutes, then a beer in the middle, what was happening? And then the second scene, and then a big cliffhanger at the end is what's going to happen in the next one? And then you're let's go back to the taproom in a month time, so to see episode number 2, and then episode number 3. And so it was presenting a small doses that makes the digestion easily.
I was going to say that, that lends itself, doesn't it, to getting around in that kind of format, lets people get to the bar. And in terms of the themes of the operas that you've chosen and that you've performed or put on so far, that you touched on Halloween and I suppose spirits. I was going to say the occult, but Halloween isn't really about the occult, is it? It's about scary things, I suppose. Yeah. But there's an element of science and philosophy as well that you're trying to explore.
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming at this as a viewer, really. What was so fascinating to me originally, and it was kind of an education when I first started speaking to you about it, was the connection that brewing has historically with the iconography of the witch and of witchcraft, because it was such a mainstay in kind of in civilized societies for the last 6,000 years, for its important medicinal qualities. It's only been in the last few hundred years that the science of fermentation has been really broken down and understood. So before that, those gaps were filled with notions of magic and ultimately witchcraft in medieval England, which is what the opera's about. And that's what actually is so exciting about brewing as well, is it's the alchemical nature of the thing. It's people talk about how brewing is a kind of a mixture of art and science.
So just finally, I wanted to ask you both, what next? How do you grow this? Where do you take it? What are things that you want to consolidate or?
Well, obviously we've got the next performance, which is going to be a Halloween.
It's coming up on the 1st of November, is that right?
Yeah, I think? Friday the 1st of November, which will be Digbeth First Friday as well. It's the first time we've done it on Digbeth First Friday because we haven't wanted to clash, but this time just the way that everything fell with Halloween and the story being about Bess, who is accused of being a witch. I didn't say about a witch because she's not a witch. We thought, we'll do it this time. We'll see how it goes. That's what is next. And we've got operas for the next year planned in, which won't be this story. They're going to be new operas that you guys are working on now. And I think we're just going to keep on pushing it, really, and keep seeing what we can do. And, we've got an audience that is growing and repeating and I think we're just going to do our best to stick to that, really, and see if it can grow. There isn't really precedent for the relationship that we have. As long as it works, we'll keep on going, really. It's great fun, isn't it?
Also, story-wise, it's great, just selling the fact that there's a brewery that showcases opera about beer. It's a great story just to tell. So I guess not kind of in an ideal world, which I don't know if it will arrive, we would have like kind of a whole program for a whole year, or kind of at least like kind of a 9 month season in which kind of every month we do a different opera or a different kind of segment of an opera or an episode. And it's something we're starting to work around that. In fact, for February till February, March, April, we're planning to do our previous opera, an opera we did about physics. But as this one is like kind of, it's not just pure physics, just shown. It's like kind of, there's a kind of a romantic story that can be easily followed. And it's about identity and about the acceptance of fate. So it's like kind of everything's keeps being like kind of down to earth. And in that one, we're going to be collaborating with Pint of Science, which is a kind of a organization that kind of organizes talks and conferences in pubs and breweries. University of Birmingham is one of the leading institutions on this aspect, so why not kind of take advantage of the greatness of Birmingham?
I think it's a really exciting collaboration. I think it's a real nice mix of things. And for now, Ollie and Daniel, thanks very much for talking to me. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
For more information, you can visit infiniteopera.com or digbrewco.com. And there'll be more from Grand Union in our next show. Now we consider that important part of our social and musical history where punk and reggae crashed into each other. Rebel Music is a new play by Birmingham writer Robin French, exploring the birth of the Rock Against Racism movement through sung narrative and earthy performances. I was lucky enough to catch up with the cast members Lauren Foster, Hannah Millwood and Nathan Queeley Dennis as they took a breather between shows.
So I'm with the cast, very excitingly, the cast of Rebel Music, which is Lauren, Hannah and Nathan. So thanks for taking time out, because I know you're busy. You've got a busy schedule of shows.
Yeah.
And firstly, let's start with talking about the kind of premise of Rebel Music, because I came to the press night and I was one of the people dancing in the... dancing in the stalls, as it were. I mean, there's no footage of that, thankfully. But it's kind of about, I suppose, where punk and reggae and roots music collide in the early 70s, loosely around Rock Against Racism as a movement. But it's a bit, it's about a bit more than that, isn't it? It's about kind of culture change and culture clash. Let's, Lauren, let's start with you. Let's pick on you first. What kind of...
So what is Rebel Music about? So, like, I mean, you've kind of covered it, as you said. It's about the music and the Rock Against Racism movement in the late 70s in Birmingham. But it's also just about, I think it's about a tale of friendship and the hardships that you can face growing up. And particularly during that time in Birmingham, Denise, my character, and Hannah's character, Trudy, were best of friends, and then... truly takes a different path down her life, and I start to discover things about my own heritage that kind of lead me down another path. And it's this kind of colliding of two perspectives, different perspectives on the world and the issues that we face. Like, my issues are completely different to ones that she faces, and we kind of struggle almost to see each other's point of view, and that's where the fallout comes. You know, it's sad, but it's also beautiful, because it's a tale of uniting Birmingham, uniting in the face of, you know, adversity. And so it is, it's a coming of age tale that most people can relate to. It's got brilliant music, it celebrates local talent, local art, and it has a message to it, which is, you know, love one another, be nice to people, don't judge. And so I think a lot of people could take a lot of different things from it. So I think it's a brilliantly rounded play in that aspect.
So Hannah, as Lauren said, there's something about friendship that's very central, yeah, I think, to this this piece.
Yeah.
And it's really tested by, I suppose, people's identities kind of, not unravelling, but being sort of deconstructed. People thinking about who they are, you know, in the face of,
yeah,
some quite sharp things, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you see, at the start of the play, Trudy is having a complete identity crisis, I guess. She's 15. We go back to the summer of 1976, and they're about to go into year 11, and where they're going to be top of the school. And Trudy's sort of seen all these, like, she talks about her brothers. She's got a rocker brother, she's got a skinhead brother, Dudley, and then Derek's a disco kid. And she's thinking, well, where do I fit into this? And so you see at the start of her journey, her deciding she's going to become a skinhead, which is a pretty bold move, because we've been speaking to people who were skinheads, and maybe there were two or three in some people's schools. It was like a proper big decision to make. And then she gets completely immersed in the music and the working class pride, and she's finding herself through this movement, and Denise is finding herself through Rock Against Racism, and they're best friends. And, you know, they are, Trudy does go to these meetings, mm-hmm, and things, mm-hmm, they're, you know, but they're sort of both together and also drifting at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Nathan, let's bring you in at this point. Now, there's a particular event that's referenced in the play, which is relates to a gig that Eric Clapton did in Birmingham.
Yeah.
Where he said various things about how and why what happened.
Yeah.
But essentially, he was fairly racially abusive to the audience. It's really sparked a movement.
Yeah.
And that has, I think that has resonance today, because, mm-hmm, it's still, although he, we can never excuse, I think, what he did and what he said. He's kind of explained it, I think, in terms of his, let's just say, his narcotic enthusiasm at the time.
Yeah.
To put that back. But it still resonates in terms of not just those issues and the, I guess, some of the sort of racial tensions that still exist, but I guess how people behave and how they express themselves. Mm.
There's a lot to say about this play, and in terms of it having parallels with the world we live in now. And although we can't exactly say, oh, there's a musician that's doing a show in Birmingham and he says a lot of racially abusive language towards members of the audience who are there, who are of a certain community that do like Eric Clapton, but he still decided to, like, berate them. There are people in society now who maybe they won't say things as bluntly and as, like, raw as Eric Clapton have said it, but they begin a language of hate that they put out into, like, the world. And I think from the back of Eric Clapton's speech is where Rock Against Racism was almost formed, and that formed here in Birmingham at the Birmingham Odeon, basically from a letter from an enemy. Now there's not necessarily that happening. We always talk about how this music basically powered this whole generation and fueled them politically and empowered them to feel like we could make a difference. And there's all this talk for there being a revolution now and different people wanting to, like, make a fight for it, but we don't have the same level of music and the enthusiasm and love for music fueling it.
Let's talk about the style of the play, mm-hmm, because it's not strictly a musical, mm, but it's very musical in the sense of how you as actors deliver the kind of narrative.
Yeah.
You sort of, you have to learn lines, but you have to learn lines to songs that we know the tunes of, but exactly, we don't know the words to.
Yeah.
Which initially I think is confusing, but does work in terms of, you know, you're putting that story in that time, mm, but also adding something different in terms of a personal Ed, so how difficult is it to sort of forget the lyrics to a song and add the words from the script? You know, how difficult is it to kind of work in that way?
Like you said, they're all well-known tunes. We all know them, even, you know, we didn't particularly grow up on the songs, but we all know them. And so that was kind of, you know, it was in the back of my mind sometimes, like, oh, well, people just get caught up with the song, but then, and not particularly listen to what we're saying, because like you just said, what we are saying is a narrative. It's pushing the journey. So it's all intentional language that needs to be heard in order for you to know the progression of the story. But I think it's just about, we had a lot of discussions with our musical director about clarity and making sure that what we're saying can actually be heard. And I think almost the music can, I mean, it often matches the energy or the vibe of what we're trying to say. So that just kind of like, it's an undercurrent and it kind of just flows and it just pushes it forward. I mean, once we learn it, well, I'm speaking myself here, but I'm pretty sure the others would agree. Once we learn it, it was kind of just like second nature. You don't even really quite, you don't think about the normal lyrics anymore. It's just, that's the song that we've made.
So when the originals come on in the car, are you singing the wrong words?
I mean, you know what, I haven't even experienced that yet, but I bet I would. But yeah, no, it's great.
And also, Hannah, I think particularly with your character, but I think with all three, well, it's more than three characters, but there's a kind of, it's very raw, isn't it, how it's delivered, and I think purposely so. That's that kind of punk mentality, isn't it? It's that kind of, you know, it's not aggressive, but it's sort of, it's very forthright. It's very, I'm feeling this now.
Yeah.
I want you to know about it.
Yeah, and I think, like, the quality that we've been working on is sort of speak, singing. We are telling a story to these incredible songs, but we're not, I'm not a trained singer, and that was never, I don't think we auditioned and were judged on the quality of our voices.
Nope.
It was all about how we could tell the story through song. And I guess like it is very raw, isn't it? Because we're telling our story, and this music is so, I mean, I just love the dancing. Mm-hmm. You know, we can just lose ourselves on stage in this amazing music. And the challenge is losing yourself in it as your character would, but then also, you know, keeping that story, you know, moving forward. Yeah. But yeah, very raw, very. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's like what's at the foundation of the genre of music anyway, like the foundation of ska, punk, rock, two-tone, reggae, all those music. It's just a rawness, like it's the most authentic version of yourself when you're singing those songs. Mm-hmm. And you're talking from a real true place, whereas you can get like certain convoluted kind of music and stuff nowadays that's at the heart of the music that we're doing in this play was a real message that people genuinely believed in. And I think that translates over to us doing these new words, because mm-hmm. it is, as like you said, it's just a raw feeling and our actual how we're feeling in that moment.
Yeah.
So you're doing a good run of the show here at the Rep in mm-hmm. Birmingham, but also bravely, you're casting your net, as it were, across the West Midlands. And you've got some of the most celebrity places in the West Midlands.
Well-known places.
So you're starting with Coventry, for example, mm-hmm. soon to be the City of Culture.
Exactly.
Mm.
And Coventry, and I guess this is referenced again, and you've touched on it, you know, has a whole sort of two-tone heritage.
Yeah.
You know, the Specials and others.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a real kind of, I think people sort of overlook Coventry in some way.
Oh, they do. 100%. They do.
And it was a real kind of flashpoint in terms of culture, you know, mm-hmm. kind of giving birth to something quite different. Nothing sounded quite like Ghost Town until it appeared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that you've got that, and you've got West Brom, which is another fantastic place. Usually seen, I think, as the home of rock and metal.
Yeah, it's quite rocky.
You got Dudley, Handsworth. You're playing Handsworth as well.
That's going to be a fun time.
I think if anybody needs to know anything about Birmingham and reggae, then probably Handsworth is the
place.
Go to
Handsworth.
Where to start.
Yeah, right.
So you're touring in lots of different venues, and they're all quite different in themselves, aren't they? So that, I guess, you have to adapt to the sort of physical space of that. But the audiences, I guess, receive things differently.
Yeah,
so,
they will.
You've done a few. Obviously, you've done a few performances to date. What kind of reaction have people, I mean, obviously we mentioned the dancing, but what kind of reception have you had?
It's been beautiful.
It has been. And it's interesting because, like you said, and we'll find it out on the tour as well, different audiences will take different parts of the play with them, and that certain things will resonate with them that they might not resonate with others. So there's a point where we might reference parts of Handsworth in one of my monologues, and I think it might have been the Saturday matinee or the Saturday night. A couple of audience members like realised the places, and they were like, "Oh, like I haven't heard that in a while." But like, for example, today we did this performance to a much younger audience, although, and they didn't necessarily get some of the references, but they understood the general story of the play. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, and it will happen on tour, going from like King's Standing to Selly Oak to Coventry to West Bromwich and things like that, which I think it will be fun. It will be a challenge in itself, but I think it will be very, very. It'll be a fun experience.
Mm-hmm. There's got to be a ripped t-shirt as well with all those names on the back.
Yeah. That'd be good.
Safety pin or something.
Yeah.
In front. There's a really poignant bit, I think, without giving too much away. There's a really poignant bit at the end where it kind of brings us right up to date, where
yes.
The two key friends, shall we say, in the piece, kind of meet after a long period of time.
Mm.
And they struggle, I think, to kind of communicate. But they kind of realise that I guess they've gone down quite different paths, but they're still kind of the same people.
Mm.
They kind of just sort of got to different places, you know, through things. And that I think that's quite interesting in terms of, it's based in the summer of 76, you know, 43 years ago or whatever.
Long time.
But it brings it right up to kind of where we are now. And I think it forces people, it forces the audience to think about that kind of division, but also that dialogue. And I think music is a good way of pulling that dialogue
it
in,
is.
Isn't it?
Yeah, unites everyone, doesn't it?
It is. I think that's the crux of the show. Like, I'm sure if Alex or Robin were here, they would say the exact same. Like, when they were creating it, they started with the love of the music first and foremost, and then everything kind of derived off that. So that's what it's about, is kind of uniting people through. It's like you can be black, white, Asian, Christian, Muslim, anything you want to be, but you love the music and that's all that you're there for. It doesn't matter who you are. It's like music's blind. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't discriminate. And that's kind of the beautiful thing of it, because, you know, people used to go to concerts. It'd be everyone, you know, from all walks of life, and there was no judgment there. And I think that's, people just felt free, and that was what was beautiful about it. And that slowly, like, faded away and kind of diminished. But, you know, hopefully we get back to some level of that sometime soon.
So just finally, where does the show go after the tour? Where does Rebel, what's the future of Rebel Music? Does it morph into something else?
Who knows?
Well,
we don't know.
Who knows? Let's talk some things into
existence.
Into existence.
Yes.
Go on.
National tour, please.
Yes, okay.
TV adaptation. BBC, ITV, Channel 4, whatever, Netflix, just take it up. But seriously, jokes aside, those aren't jokes actually. Seriously though, the play in itself, I think, is a play that needs to be seen by a lot of people, because, again, from what we said about the parallels it has to now and all that kind of stuff. But also, it just tells such a great story, and a story about the Midlands, and I harp on about this all the time. I feel like there's not a lot of representation for the Midlands in theatre or television or media in general.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is, it's not necessarily like, it's always in a kind of comedic setting. But I feel like a lot of people wouldn't know that this was going on back then. And I think it needs to be out there, and the story needs to be told to many people, all ages, especially young people, so they can see it themselves growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And it can like inform their opinions on what they think of the world and stuff like that. But yeah, so hopefully there is another life for it afterwards.
Excellent.
Fingers crossed.
Well,
touch wood.
It's a great show, some great performances as well. So well done to you all. And
Thank you.
As I say, break a leg.
Thank you.
But also break some furniture.
Yes.
Probably part of it. But Lauren, Hannah and Nathan, thanks very much.
Thank you
so
for having
much.
Us.
Thank
Cheers.
You.
Thank you.
Diaries to the Ready now with a couple of updates you really shouldn't miss. Crime thriller writer and previous guest on the show, A.A. Abbott, launches the last in her latest series of murder and intrigue, The Last Trail. The book's out at the end of October, and for more information, you can visit aaabbott.co.uk. And remember, that's two B's and two T's. To calm your nerves after that, Birmingham Bach Choir's centenary concert will take place on Saturday the 16th of November at Lichfield Cathedral. This gala concert celebrates one of the West Midlands' oldest choirs, and for tickets, links and more information, you can go to www.birmingham.barkchoir.com. And finally, the first half of October saw Birmingham Bedlam Festival return for a fourth year. A celebration of arts, mental health and well-being, the festival is a collaboration between Birmingham and Solihull Mental Health Trust, the Rep Birmingham, Sampad South Asian Arts, Mac Birmingham and Geese Theatre, amongst others. I headed down to its launch event to get some perspective from its performers, organisers and supporters.
So I'm here with Sabra, who's the producer of the Bedlam Festival 2019. And Sabra, let's just start by talking about, I guess, some of the history of Bedlam. So I think it's in its fourth year, is that right?
Yes, so this is the fourth Bedlam Arts and Mental Health Festival. We started off quite small with Birmingham Rep as the key partner, together with the Birmingham and Solihull Mental Health Foundation Trust and a whole range of artists. And it has grown from that. So we've grown and added partners. So we now have got Midlands Arts Centre, Geese Theatre Company, Birmingham Rep and Sampad South Asian Arts as partners as well. The festival's always been produced by Birmingham and Solihull Mental Health Foundation Trust as part of their work to reach communities in a different way.
And that mix of partners and those partnerships give you a real diversity, don't they, in terms of the programme?
Yes, I mean, it means that we're in two different spaces for a start, and it gives us a range of different sort of spaces to be in. At MAC, for example, we can tap into the visual arts expertise of the centre, and you know, we can reach different communities through being in different spaces. We also do tours to community venues, so we try and make sure that some of our work can reach beyond those two spaces.
Now, although the festival always focuses on mental health and the arts, this year, I think, partly through World Mental Health Day, there's a focus on suicide prevention?
Yes, it coincides with World Mental Health Day deliberately, and because of that focus of that day on suicide prevention, it's an issue and a theme, I suppose, that the performers have picked up on. I mean, Bedlam works so that we commission work, but we also take touring work, and actually that theme is coming up again and again in work that artists want to create, and therefore it's reflected in our programme in terms of what is being offered to us and work that is strong to present to audiences. So we definitely have more of a concentration on that. And Birmingham and Solihull Mental Health Foundation Trust have used arts quite consistently over the years in terms of training as well for specialists within the service, and we've picked up on that theme this year for a symposium which focuses on how do we use arts to assist with suicide prevention strategies.
Now, in producing a festival, you've got quite a hard task, haven't you, really, because do you only have to decide what's in, but you have to kind of decide what's out, I guess, don't you? It's kind of curator's role in some ways, isn't it, I think?
Yes, it is. And what we try and do is have a range of themes reflected within the programme. What we want to do is have artists who can show us their own experiences as well as depicting experiences of mental ill health. So we don't want to just have a focus on one theme, and that helps us to curate it because we want to go across the area of mental health and help audiences engage with the different themes within that area.
You mentioned some, I think, fairly creative, interactive things that people can kind of dip into. So you mentioned some of the tours, for example, I think, that Birmingham Museums are doing. But it's also, I think, a showcase of experts by experience. So people who've lived and breathed particular issues or, you know, particular experiences that they can share in a very accessible way, I think.
Yes, so we've got a whole range of stuff that people can dip into if they don't want to come and see a full-on performance, or as well as a full-on performance. And Experts by Experience is a service sort of offered by the Mental Health Trust, and it enables people to meet with people from everyday life who can then talk to them about their own mental ill health experience. And I suppose it just helps people feel like, you know, this figure of one in four becomes normalised. And so you can meet people who've had a range of different experiences. You can have your own personal, private conversation with them and ask them anything you want to about that experience, and they are happy to share it. So it's a really unique opportunity for people to have that conversation, and that's taking place here at MAC on Saturday the 11th of October.
And just finally, folks listening and want to sort of find out more about Bedlam when it's happening, I think it's on to the 12th of October, but after the festival, where do they go to find about all the things that, you know, sort of have inspired them and kind of motivated them? So where should they be looking online?
Well, I think one of the key things for our partners involved is that I don't think this is we're only going to do this kind of work for the festival. So I think staying in touch with the work of the Birmingham Rep, Geese Theatre Company, Midlands Arts Centre and SANPAD, they would be able to see a range of work, including work that picks up on themes of mental health. I know that the Birmingham Rep, for example, has got a big Shifting the Dial project, and some of that will be showcased over the coming years, where they are working with young African Caribbean men on mental health issues. It's a continuing area for SANPAD South Asian Arts to be working on, and we pick up on different themes. So I think it's staying in touch with those arts organisations, but also beyond that, there are many, many artists in Birmingham who are producing work, and Stereo Hype, who are presenting a showcase here at MAC, are regular producers of arts and mental health work. So I think it's sort of staying in touch with those websites, signing up to some of those newsletters, following Bedlam on Twitter, and signing up to our mailing list will also be continuing to promote work that's out there.
Well, I think it's a really vibrant programme this year, so congratulations for that.
Thank you.
And thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm with Lady Sanity.
Yep.
And you've just done a performance at the launch of Bedlam Festival.
Yeah, little sneak preview.
Excellent stuff.
Thank you.
So let's start with you and how you sort of came to your music, which I would broadly describe as kind of hip-hop.
Yeah, definitely hip-hop. It's a really weird one because I actually hated music when I was younger, and my sister used to play it so much that it kind of just stuck with me. Started venturing into lyricism. And then, yeah, just as I got older and the problems that I faced, I just found it a really good way to kind of just escape.
And is it a release when you kind of perform? Do you kind of, does it help sort of manage some of the kind of issues, maybe?
Definitely. It helps manage the issues, but it also instills a lot of positives in me as well. When I was in school, I was really quiet. I didn't have much confidence, but I've noticed going out there in the real world, performing has boosted a lot of confidence, a lot of people skills, talking to people. That's helped me in my careers as well. So, yeah, a lot of greats.
And you performed a couple of tracks for us, which were excellent.
Thank
Everybody
you.
Was moving, I
Thank
saw.
You.
Everyone
Thank
was
you.
Swaying.
Thank you.
The first of which was called Stuck,
yep.
I think,
yep.
which really kind of described
yep.
a situation that you kept ending up in.
Definitely. And it talks about mentally feeling stuck, but also physically as well. I know Birmingham as a city, it's got so much talent, but I noticed a lot of my friends felt stuck in the same position. And, you know, we're all young, we don't have many responsibilities, but everybody felt a little bit trapped. So I wrote that song really for myself and a lot of people around me as well that were struggling to say, you know, we're all in this together.
And the other song you did was called Focus.
Yep.
And I had a great rhyme, which I've forgotten.
Yep.
But really it was about kind of potential. And
yeah,
about sort
definitely.
Of being true to yourself and
definitely
believing in what you can do.
Definitely. I think there's so much pressure nowadays, especially with things like social media and the digital side of things, where you can't really get away from things now. Everything's just constantly in your face and, you know, you're constantly comparing yourself with other things and other opportunities. So Focus is really just about focusing on yourself and believing in yourself and your own potential.
So you're doing some things for Bedlam Festival, which
yep.
is why we're all gathered here
yep.
this evening. Tell me what you're doing for the festival, your performances.
Yep, so I'm performing a great set with a great amount of music, a lot more than I performed here. And yeah, just really diving into the topic of mental health, especially amongst the black community. But just really talking and discussing how music has helped me kind of just open my mind and feel a lot more relaxed within my environment and within myself as a person.
And excellent. So folks that can't get to the festival,
mm-hmm.
I don't know why they wouldn't be able to, but where would they find your music and find out more about yourself?
So I'm absolutely everywhere online, really easy, ladysanity.com, and all my information's up there, all my music's there. And yeah, I'm really easy to find.
Excellent. We will check that out. But for
Thank
now,
you.
Thanks for your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
It's like they got a point to prove. Quiet when they're up in front of you. Everybody wanna waste time on some tittle-tattle for a couple views. Make a bitter battle and follow suit. Get a little baffled, shuffle back to booth. I'm a little quiet but the back is proof that my last words always back in truth. All these fickle minds gonna dabble in a little grain. Bars a shamble for a little shine. Love for life, 90, give me mine. Finish line, won't exist for me. Tell her rhymes and still make history. Won't sit in line, living lies while I'm living life. I don't wanna hear that noise, mute it out to avoid. If you're gonna say it with your chest, keep the energy on point. Keep it. Noise, mute it out to avoid. If you're gonna say it with your chest, keep the energy on point. Keep the energy on one double O, like I'm under the oath. And the after my throat with a mask and a rope, hiding facts in the smoke. Buying the tricks, but the facts gonna show. Doing the most, nothing but caps in your flow. Own up the 80, your bars are unknown. Still out and chill out and lower your tone. Don't say it's minor when baby I'm grown. answers like your movements, your words are a mystery. Made an assessment and saw there no risk to me. Even with auto-tune, they couldn't pitch to me. Keeping them silent is the perfect remedy. All that noise, mute it out to avoid. If you're gonna say it, say it, bitches, just keep the energy on point. Keep it. Noise, mute it out to avoid. If you're gonna say it, bitches, just keep the energy on point. Con artists with no context, how do you concentrate? Contracts with no comebacks, like it's better to complicate. Contact is an untask, gotta keep my conscience safe. Or to keep my circle paid, close it down, don't cross the tape. All that noise, mute it out to avoid. If you're gonna say it, bitches, just keep the energy on point. Keep it. Noise, mute it out to avoid. If you're gonna say it, bitches, just keep the energy on point. All that noise, mute it out to avoid. If you're gonna say it, bitches, just keep the energy on point. Noise, mute it out to avoid. If you're gonna say it, bitches, just keep the energy on point. 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 If you can't beat them, then join them. Trust me, my energy don't need the poison. Block out the noise, distort in my soul. All these strings attached and none of them making me whole.
So I'm with Sandra of Red Earth Collective. Mm-hmm. Sandra, tell me firstly what that is, and then secondly how you're involved with the Bedlam Festival.
Okay, so the Red Earth Collective is an organisation that's made up of three directors, myself, my partner Nick and Helen, and we've all got some connection with mental health. And we use the arts to stimulate conversations about mental health and wellbeing issues, particularly targeting marginalised and racialised communities. So we produce plays. We did a play here at the MAC earlier this year called Revealed, which was three generations of black men exploring some of the issues that are affecting their relationship. And there was a big revelation in the play. One of the characters was gay, and that sparked a whole range of anger and frustration and tears amongst the cast. So we do plays, we do festivals. Stereotype Festival has been running for the last 14 years. I started it in London when I was in London. I came to Birmingham 6 years ago and brought Stereotype Festival here at the MAC. So the MAC feels like my creative home.
Home from home,
creative home.
So yeah. You were talking earlier on, you were talking about the transformative power of the arts and the power that the arts can have in terms of people's mental health, and also I guess their identity in terms of working out who they are and how they feel.
Yes, yeah. I did some work recently in a medium secure service in the Midlands, and two of the men that were in that facility were artists. They were spoken word artists, and up until the point where they revealed that they were artists, we did something quite formal with them, got them to talk about their dreams and aspirations, and then when they talked about being artists, their face lit up and they suddenly became the artist. They weren't the person, that man in a medium secure unit. They were an artist, and one or two of them wanted to perform. So, I mean, that's a very, very simple example of how owning and talking about the arts can be so, can transform you from thinking of yourself as someone with a mental illness to someone who's a creative, who's got something to say. If you're someone with a mental health problem in the system, you don't feel that you have something to say. But if you're an artist in that system, you have something to say.
So it's about,
and you
I guess,
say it.
A channel for people's voice, I guess.
Yeah, it allows people to express themselves, to say who they are, to explore the things that have meaning to them and gives them hope. Yeah.
So what should people look out for as part of Bedlam in terms of the things that you're involved in?
Well, our contribution to Bedlam is Stereotype Evening on the 11th of October, featuring Lady Sanity, who you just heard, Call Me Unique, who is a singer-songwriter based in Birmingham, and Treadwell Blood, who's also a rapper based in the West Midlands. So it's going to be a night of poetry, singing, soul-bearing, creativity. So come along and enjoy the energy and the vibe.
It's excellent stuff, and I will urge people to do it. And thanks for talking to me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now it's time to close the box. My thanks to Grand Union, Infinite Opera, Dig Brew, Bedlam Festival 2019, Red Earth Collective, Sampad South Asian Arts, Lady Sanity, the cast of Rebel Music and the team at the Rep Birmingham, M7PR, 448 Creative, and Mac Birmingham. The New Curiosities Box is written and presented by me, James Sandy, and is a King of the Buttons production for 107.5 Switch Radio.